Friends,
the title of the talk as was announced, The Will to Overcome Evil, subtitle Celebrating the Self. Of course, the previous speaker already mentioned the significance in a certain way about Dasara, what it signifies. The victory of Devi Durga over the demon Mahishasura. Now these two represent the Daivik powers as against the Asuric powers. To that extent, in the secret doctrine, an extensive teaching has been given as to what is called the war in heaven. That means war not only on earth, not only within the heart of human being, raging in the heart of man, but even at the cosmic level, even at the astronomical level, in certain ways even at the geological and physical level, this kind of war between two forces continually is going on. And it seems that we can do nothing about it. But the recognition of the fact that there is evil not only in the world but within my own self, this recognition is necessary before we can take the step of overcoming it. In other words, we must know the nature of evil. But to know darkness, we must know light. And to know light, we must know darkness. In other words, if you want to know what is goodness, you must know its opposite quality. And if you want to know what is the opposite, you must know just its opposite. So that these seven parameters on one side, we must know so that we may know what are the virtues available to mankind. Similarly, these seven mortal sins, this kama, krodha, lobha, etc., has to be known at least theoretically so that we may understand the other side of human nature. In other words, we appreciate that there is in man and collectivity of humanity, these two forces are continually at war. That there are cycles of victory of the good historically and there are cycles of its defeat. But then these are cyclical periods and which we must accept. Now this is something, a very important idea to remember, because during an hour of defeat in a nation, when a nation gets defeated, for instance, when a great calamity takes over out of that, people are likely to forget that there is a possibility of a dawn once again, sometime in a period of time. But it is a matter of cycle. So this is just by the way, but we can dwell on it a little later. Now talking about this, first the secret doctrine in volume 2, page 76, speaks about Devi Durga, that it is an allegorical figure, it is Kali. It is the white aspect of Shakti, spiritual, universal energy. It is also will to conquer. So that is why this title comes very aptly, that it is that Shakti aspect of, because Shakti has four aspects, Ma Kali, Maheshwari, Ma Saraswati, Ma Lakshmi. So this Kali aspect is the warrior aspect which is continually at war against this Asuric Shaktis, being of a Daivik nature. So coming back to this war in heaven, which has nothing else but archetypal war, representing war between good and evil. Archetypal in the sense that it is a fundamental concept in the very cosmos itself, a type which is already registered in the Akashic realm. And therefore it has its own expression at the astral level and therefore at the level of human mind. So from the archetypal good and evil, these wars, I mean representing them, are those wars in heaven. And many of these mythological and legendary stories are connected with this. For instance, in secret doctrine we come across the war of Titans, war of Titans, which is the war between Devas and Daityas. Then there are legends of the great embodiments of good and evil among great adepts. the adept of the right hand part and the adept of the left hand part are what are called the black magicians and the white magicians. And talking about Ramayana, Rishabhi says that Rama and Ravana are the these two opposite forces. We got our reading here. It does say that this is the second reading. This allegory of Ramayana was a great battle between personified good and evil, between white and black magic. What is the purpose? For the supremacy of the divine forces or of the lower terrestrial or cosmic powers. Because this victory or defeat would mean these powers would go in the hands of the Asuric forces. The spiritual forces can also be manipulated, as well as dark force, physical and material forces can also be made use of if there is the victory of the demoniacal forces. So the victory of Rama represents a kind of protective shield over those great powers of nature. And therefore nature really came to his rescue, as you will see in Ramayana, how great being, great natural forces also came to in his army, came as his army. So these two classes of adepts, such as Krishna and Kamsa, and in the Zoroastrian tradition, that is the conflict between Zarathustra and Turbaratur. Turbaratur is a kind of a dark star. Tur means darkness. Turbaratur means the height of darkness. Therefore, Zarathustra represents the golden star. So these are, of course, allegorical or symbolic representation of two powerful titanic forces coming at the pinnacle at certain period in the history of humanity, cyclically. Only when there is accumulation of extreme evil, a collectivity of the evil taking ultimately at the pinnacle, and at the top is the great adept on one side, and then the collectivity of the evil coming together and creating a great monster, a great giant asura, facing one another and ultimate final warfare, which, as we said, results either way, one way, and not that every time it is successful. But that should not disappoint, as we have mentioned, that periodically there are wars which are both ways, which succeed either way. Now, there is a quotation about this theological view of this warfare. It is the fourth quotation there. It says, esoteric philosophy shows that man is truly the manifested deity. Now this is the most central teaching of theosophy, that man is God in exile, man is God in miniature, in his true divine nature, in his true essential nature. So that there is actually luminous in his own true nature, and therefore, but in exile. That means he has taken upon himself, this life, it has taken upon itself a kind of an aura, an outer covering, which prevents the light from shining out to its full bloom. Until that the outer coating, the outer vehicle, that deh, permits that inner dehi to shine forth. So this is first statement, that man in his true nature is a spiritual entity. But in both these aspects, and since he has got the higher as well as the lower, theology cannot admit this. Theology thinks that man is born in sin, that he has to be helped out from some outside forces. Some outside help is needed, especially through the sacrifice of Christ. Evil will ever predominate until that day when humanity, that is the great day, when humanity redeemed by the true divine enlightenment. It doesn't require a kind of a savior to save him. It requires a kind of inner environment to change in him. So the whole of humanity can be redeemed by the true divine element, which gives the correct perception of things. In other words, an enlightenment is needed in order to overcome this. So now this conflict between this theological view that Ormus is as against Ahriman, that God as against demon, is absolutely rejected by theosophy, On the other hand, in Bhagavad, in Gatha definitely, it is mentioned that the doctrine of what is called duality, that Brahma as a cosmic force, that Ishvara, the great fountainhead, he expresses himself in a dual way and he presides over them, called the two forces, or what are called the twin spirits, Akomano and Bahumano. And the moment these are manifest, the duality supervenes and a conflict begins. The two lines of forces, the centripetal and the centrifugal, the north and the south, the darkness and the light, and therefore the good and the evil. So from the very beginning, this confrontation has taken place and is justified because it is the balance between the two makes the whole vehicle moving. So you require two wheels in order to run a car, both in a juxtaposition, one in a balanced way. It's only when one or the other is unbalanced, there is some amount of tension takes place. So this is one, but the, and that is one of the reasons why in Gatha, at time to time, at places, Zarathustra describes mankind, I mean, he invites his followers to become warriors. He calls them Rathastar. Rathastar is equivalent to being Kshatriya. To enter into the warfare, he invites them to join the army of his Rathastars. And creating an army means collectivity of the thought of good people so that they can confront the evil that was there during his lifetime. In fact, that was one of the reasons why he descended on earth. So Zarathustra invites people to become Rathastars. Just as Arjuna was invited by Krishna and reminded him of his Kshatriya Dharma. So this conflict is a cosmic level as well as in man, between good and evil. But then, as the Bhagavad Gita says, light and darkness are the world's eternal ways. And that they are necessary, as we mentioned, that they are necessary as contrast. Because without light, you cannot understand darkness, because if there is supposing sunlight all the time, and if there are no shadows, you will never be able to appreciate the beauty or the presence of light itself. In the other way, of course, if there is darkness all along, all the way through, total darkness, we will not be able to appreciate anything, we will not even conceive of light. So to be able to appreciate one against the other, some element of the opposite is necessary in this side of the earth for our understanding. But remember, they are necessary as balancing forces to bring about certain amount of equilibrium in nature. Now, therefore we must try and understand the very, I mean, that means to understand, to defeat evil, we must have to understand the nature of evil, where it originates, how far and well, how it progresses, and what it does to man. Now, origin, we don't only have to remember the origin of evil, we have to remember the origin of both. As we just mentioned, that, as Zarathustra mentioned, that these two manos, at the cosmic level, at the highest level, they have their representation in man. The Bahumano is functioning in man, as well as the lower mind also is functioning in him. But above that, there is at a cosmic level these two forces functioning. And therefore, it is described, the origin of good and evil is described here in the secret doctrine, the very first reading. Archaic philosophy, that is philosophy itself, recognizing neither good nor evil as a fundamental or independent power, but starting, that is historically starting, evolutionary speaking, starting from absolute all, universal perfection eternal, absolute all. Then it is tracing both through the course of natural evolution. And it will lead to pure light condensing gradually into form, hence becoming matter or evil. That means light, as it condenses itself, enters into this ethereal condition, that ethereal light, what may be called, then what may be called the astral light, still lower the material light that we see about on this earth. So this gradual condensation, it is this condensing reason, condensing process itself is responsible for this duality of good and evil coming in the way. So starting from light, coming back to the darkness of the inconscience, total inconscience, the matter of a kind where there is no light at all. Such a possibility we can never even imagine, but such a possibility exists. Just as the extreme of light exists, there must be its corresponding extreme. But in between, this condensation has taken place, on account of which, this is one reason, this is one way by which we can explain the origin of good and evil. In a secret doctrine which is throughout in cosmogenesis, it describes this kind of coming down of the highest to the lowest. For instance, describes that there is a primordial unity which periodically manifests itself as plurality, and therefore duality seems to supervene. Its coming into form immediately takes upon these two forces of duality. Duality means the two forces in conjunction one with the other. They are called Purusha and Prakriti, spirit and matter. So this starting itself, at the very beginning of the beginning, you find two forces are face to face with each other, but in complete balance at the early stage, at the beginning. But as it comes down, as more and more it gets informed into matter, this matter is something which drags heavily on the spirit. So that the spirit gets gradually more and more enveloped. So that the more and more it is enveloped with sort of a darkness, because the envelope itself prevents the light from shedding out, is responsible for what we today know as evil in man. Now, that darkness is necessary is something very unpalatable. Even that, when we say is necessary, is very unpalatable. You say that is necessary, but that scientists come to our rescue and say that yes, of course, the death of plants results in regeneration of the soil, and therefore the soil becomes rich thanks to the death of plants. And in our body, continually, thousands of cells are dying out every second to be replaced by fresh new cells. If this dying process does not take place, not only that the death may not take place, but that body will crucify. In other words, body will grow and body will stop growing. So that there is in a child, there are forces of generative forces which are creative ones, they are called the elemental lives, which are of a creative kind, which are the growing kind. So the child grows very rapidly. Then there is the period of youth, where there is a fullness of life functioning in it. And then there is a decline because the other forces of life, the darker forces, the negative forces, take over, and therefore there is death. And that's, so that at the very birth of every cell, there is the germ of death. At every birth of every anything that has a beginning must have an end. If there is a beginning of life, it has bound to end in this side of conditioned existence. So that we must accept it. This is an idea, we must accept this. There is no need rebelling against it. What we can do, as somebody asked Mr. Judd, what we can do about Kali Yuga, he said, we can't do anything about it, but we can do a lot in it. That means we have got a tremendous opportunity in that condition. When darkness is surrounding us, at least we must light a candle. We must do something, we must try to preserve a little candle of light which we have got within us. When everybody is losing his sanity, we must preserve our sanity around us. So this is one of the injunctions, so that we must never be overwhelmed by either of the two. Because sometimes goodness can make you feel a kind of a glamour. Goodness also can cast a glamour on our mind, which is, oh, I'm goody, goody, good. And continually thinking oneself being good is itself a kind of a glamour which is cast on one. You must be aware that behind that, there can be darkness any moment entering into us, any moment. It is only waiting to make an entry, and the entry point is the weakest link in our constitution. Remember, we have, all of us, some wicket, some kind of tiny links, and it's the weakest link which breaks the whole chain. So you must remember there must be a little chain of weakness in us. So things like that also is necessary. Another phenomenon that takes place due to this duality is what is known as the phenomenon of egoity. This ahankara sets in, it supervenes at a cosmic level, that I-ness, that sense of selfness, what is called the selfhood. This egoity goes down into from the selfless state to unselfish state to selfish state. It gets more and more materialized. So what is selfishness now has already begun from that natural ahankaric consciousness within our nature. That sense of self as an individuality, as an individual spark. So that from that light when the sparks are emanated, as they get more and more condensed, that sense of identity, the sense of self takes over. And when it predominates, this is the reason why it then gets materialized into selfishness. So you can imagine that which was pure and beautiful becomes less and less and less, and then ultimately sinks down to its lowest level. So now that, therefore the overcoming evil means going the process upwards. So at human level, when the man comes on the scene, that means when the manushya comes on the scene. As the Srivi says, that until the man comes on the scene, good and evil were naturally balanced. They were naturally taking their own cyclical ups and downs. When man comes on the scene, that is, when man becomes consciously manushya, when his mind is so lighted up that he becomes a responsible individual, responsible to himself, he becomes a self-conscious chooser. It is at this stage he is free to choose between the two points, either way, this way or that way. Because of that freedom, he has his responsibility. And therefore it is with human being that the true evil started. And therefore, this will be says in that one of the readings that is there in your hand. One of the last readings. The demon of pride, lust, rebellion and hatred has never had any being on earth before the appearance of physical self-conscious man. It is man who has begotten, nurtured and allowed the pain to develop in his heart. He again who contaminated the indwelling God in himself by linking the pure spirit with the impure demon of matter. In other words, this karmic principle in man, that central middle principle as it is called, is a link between the higher part of man, the higher trinity, and the lower personal self. In other words, man also is dual. Just as the light and darkness are the dualities, in man also this manasic duality. That man, the thinker, is dual, that he is heaven-tending, he is heaven-aspiring, as well as turning towards the earth, earthly, getting himself, permitting himself to be involved into matter. So these two forces have already begun in man, the moment man has become a thinking man. Now, we were talking about the nature of evil, and therefore the evil, as we said, as it starts with consciousness of the two forces. This consciousness is drawn between the two forces. These two forces are described as Kamadeva on one side and the psychic Kama on the other side. So that Kamadeva, it is that primal energy of creative force. This primal, the primal will to create, the primal will to express itself, the will to become conscious. This is there at the very beginning of the beginning. It is there, as he said in the Rig Veda, that desire arose in it, which was the primal germ of mind. That it What was it? It was the primal germ of mind within which desire awakened to express itself. So that in that consciousness, the first that desire, which was of a nature of light intent. So the Kamadeva is described as fire, is a fiery power. Therefore it is energetic power, it is a creative power, which at our level now has been so grossly materialized that it has now become the lower karma, that which involves us into our passions and possessive nature. So this duality in man, so that we have in us also the karma devic shakti, the creative energy, the creative force. What is love after all in human heart? As Yashvi says in Vaishnava sense, compassion is an attribute. It is the law of love, eternal harmony, and at that time it is the law of love eternal. So this compassion to create is that motherly feeling to express itself. That Dudamayi at one place is described as a very compassionate mother. And although though she is so very ferocious as Kali, another aspect of her nature she is described as a very loving, compassionate mother. All these four Shaktis are mothers, described as mother, the mother quality of a compassionate nature. So at the cosmic level, those are the great divine powers which are of compassionate nature. But when this compassion becomes personal passion, connected with our human personal ego, then the whole mystery begins. So the beginning of living in man is the beginning of involvement into materiality and into self-consciousness, consciousness of personal ego. But then there must be a will to overcome it. It is the same will, which is a creative will, has now to be used to fight against that power of evil. And then, to do that, you see, in any battlefield, what we require is a strategy. And one of the strategies of a battlefield is to know your enemy. You must know the strategy of the enemy itself. You must know the weapons that the enemies are going to use against you. So this is a technique of offense. So if you are aware, so much so that actually in those days they used to send their own spies into the other camp to find out what is going on in the enemy army and what are their powers and what are the tricks that they are using and what are their plans. So that the strategies to overcome evil therefore is to know the nature of evil. And therefore this chapter of vigilance, which also represents some kind of observing oneself, awareness of oneself, vigilantly aware of ourselves, how the lower forces arise in us. Just as goodness arises in us, sometimes from behind. We say from behind because Christ mentions at one place, telling Satan, get it on Satan, go behind me. He knows that he attacked him from behind. Then only when it confronted him in front, which is a very rare event, it can happen only in presence of Christ. This happens in case of the trials of Chelaship, the confront of evil right in front of us. All along it is secretly, silently, behind, whispering like the serpent. So, observe. So observation and vigilance and awareness is necessary in order to understand evil. So what is its nature? It is of nature of lobha. At first it comes like acquisitive nature. I want this, I desire this. And we are never satisfied. We want more and more. Until desire possesses us. We want possessions, but the time comes when we are obsessed with certain desires. And sometimes people are ruining their life, ruining their families with that obsession. Wanting to possess things, powers, power, money, wealth, prosperity. Or I want that lover. A girl says, oh, I only want that man, and at any cost I shall help him. So this kind of possessive nature is of a nature of karma or lower nature. Then another thing is that it changes us constantly to our lower consciousness. The karma nature, it always continually drags us down to earth, to lower consciousness. to earthliness, to demands of the lower nature. And we are not even aware that we are continually being dragged into it. We jolly our natural urges, as many psychologists say, that we have got the drives. The first, that we have got the biological drive of roti, kabla and makan for our security. Then we have got the drive to assert ourselves, to be recognized in our society, to belong to a society. Then there is a further drive to have kind of a self-esteem, that I must appear in my own eyes somebody. And so on, you know, these are the kind of a subtle desires which has its own value in life. But then they can take over possession. So they can even possess us. So some, we are actually chained to our eyes. As H.P.B. says, that there is a lot of evil on this earth, and that he says a lot of grief in this world, just because our eyes are reverted to earth earthly. Our eyes are continually down. Instead of looking upwards, and then she says inwards, we are continually looking outwards. So we are bahirmukhi, continually looking out, asking for this, seeking for this, never being satiated. This is one of the quality of karma. It is never satisfied. It asks for more and more. So we have to nip in the bud. That is, when the bud grows, you cut it out. More than that, that Buddha says, it's no use pulling out the tree, uprooting them one by one. I mean, cutting out the trees from the surface. Not pruning, but uprooting. Right from the root, you have to uproot them, and it becomes very painful. So this is the nature of the evil. So we have to do it out. And another thing is, it is only developed drop by drop. In Dhammapada, there is a statement, it says that just as a pot can be filled by drop of water, drip of water, in the same way, evil, don't think evil is harmless. That simple evil, don't think it is harmless. By drop it may grow. Say for instance, I may have a carelessness, my habit of being careless, which is too obvious to me, being careless. A little left here, a little left there, you let go. It accumulates, it becomes a second nature, it becomes habitual. And then a great lapse may result in tragedy. And there was talk about the want of a nail. The whole army was lost. We do not go into that, but it happens. And Bhagavad Gita tells you very beautifully at one place in the second chapter, that if you have got inclination, if you have got inclined to a little sense object, small things, a little sense pleasure, and if you entertain it from time to time, and don't stop it the moment it starts, knowing that it is a little serpent which has entered into our nature, then we get develop a concern into it. Out of that concern, we get attached to it. This attachment is extremely difficult because it creates a cycle of habit. We do this again and again, we go to it. From that, there are likelihood of being two things. Either we are satiated and therefore we let go and we are frustrated, or something comes in the way and we are again frustrated and we enter into resentment, that is anger, krodha. So from karma, to begin with, karma, lobha, and then comes krodha. The three great enemies of man. And krodha in Bhagavad Gita is described as a great enemy of man. Then from anger, delusion comes. That is, incapacity, confusion. We are unable to see, perceive reality in its own way. That out of this delusion, there is the loss of spiritual memory and the loss of discernment. That is, buddhi. So that this is a kind of a chain reaction. And you not to break the chain, you have to start at the top. You don't have to come in between. In between, once it is, habit is formed, it is very difficult to break. But it is possible to break. So that the very first cigarette leads to more and more. The very first lie requires more lies to strengthen it. So you find in our life, you find that the beginning is always in a very small way, a very humbless looking way. But this is the glamour. One of the quality of this is Maya, the kind of a glamorous thing which enchants us. It comes in a very beautiful form. It comes in a form of humility. Oh, I am very humble. In my own heart of heart, I feel I am humble, I am nobody. But this feeling of nobody itself is a burden on myself, because we must not think of oneself as nobody. We must not lower oneself in our own eyes. Neither we have to raise ourselves in an exaggerated way. So that we may have a proper perspective of our own nature. That is why vigilance. So we must balance ourselves. We must know where we stand, our assets and our liabilities, facing ourselves squarely. So that there must not be an exaggerated humility on one side and exaggerated pride on the other. There must be a balance rule. That is why Buddha says, middle path, either this way or this way. But this juxtaposition between the two requires a great wisdom, great understanding, great knowledge, but it comes slowly. Therefore the good also grows slowly, drop by drop. Thus as evil grows, goodness also can grow slowly. A little goodness here, a little goodness there, then grows. It happened with Rabindranath Tagore. She says, at one time he says, when father used to take me to bazaar and used to give me coins in my hand. And he says, whenever you feel like giving to somebody, some beggar, give it to him. He would pass through a bazaar over a round of an hour of giving them an exercise in the morning, permitting the child to find his own judgment as to whom to give. In the beginning he would give carelessly. Later on he realized certain amount of judgment. And Rabindranath Tagore says that later on, I develop an instinctual way of knowing whom to give to the right people and how much to give. So that in a small, small little gifts here and there, when we do it, something unfolds in us. Just as evil unfolds in us, gradually goodness also can grow. So the will, to conquer evil is a tremendous task. It is a task of the lifetimes, not one lifetime. Because otherwise all the past sanskars and skandhas we bring with us now. My present nature, our present nature, is the sum total of our past, both positive as well as negative. And that I must be able to detect that. That is very important. I must be able to detect the assets that I have. I must use them properly and let them grow, unfold them. Similarly, I must find out right from the beginning. And especially our enemies are our friends, because they point to our errors. Our enemies, when they criticize us, sometimes tell us some very unpleasant truth. So we must not discard the opinion of an enemy, because sometimes the enemies do tell us and very unpleasant truth, and we must start thinking as to why. Sometimes the friends would like to please us, but the enemies, they don't want to please us. They want to tell you the truth on your face. So to that extent, our enemies are our friends. They help us. So any little hint we get here and there about somebody pointing out an error, make a note of that and see, because we have to nib it in the bud, otherwise it will grow. So as a good general, you must know the nature of our army. Just as Arjuna came in the very middle of the battle, he says, put me into the middle of the battlefield so that he can study and observe the enemy field and his own. And tells Krishna, tell me who are my enemies and who are my friends. You know, this is a kind of survey we have to take every night. We have to take every night, but the help can be taken through those parameters. Don't take the help of this kama, krodha, lobha, these seven vices. There are people who actually start with this. Doesn't mean say how many vices are overcome. Not that way. Start with what are the good qualities I have in me. And then it's opposite. That why is not the dana quality enough in me? What is the objection? What is it? Why is it that I am not that selfless? It is because the whisper of the self is there coming from behind. That unconsciously the self, we are all self-centered. And therefore his opposite is self-forgetfulness. This is one of the techniques. We have to start doing it somewhere. So the whispering that we must find out that there are things which are obvious, there are certain weaknesses in us which are obvious, and there are others which are not known to us. And that not knowing them, we have to take the help of others sometimes to find out what ails me, what is the fault. That's why we go to a doctor and we ask him, what's the matter with me? So that we have to sometimes consult our senior friends. And we have sometimes in our wisdom. That's what Buddha says, that the company of the holy ones is, company of the noble one is good. Company of the fools is dangerous. Why it is good? Because good people and the real good people will tell you where you err. what are your weak points. So friend is one who has the courage to tell you on our face what is wrong with us, what is a weak nature in us, where we make an error. An occasional event here and there will open our eye to that little shadow of evil that is there in us. We shouldn't call it evil, a little weakness. It all starts with weakness. You see, then it becomes monstrosity, wickedness, a kind of a perversity, extraordinary. And therefore, such a man can become a black magician or a demon. But that is the acme of evil. But it all begins with little error here and there. So good and evil, what is called the truth and error, are the two opposites. So we should be always on the side of good. But to know good, we must also know the part of our evil. So to overcome this, we require the will to conquer. So that Devi Durga has this poetically said among these legendary elite. They are celebrating it, of course, they think it is victory. I mean, most of the people imagine that because the evil is now removed, or now we must, the rest of the months are going to be prosperous. Even this Lakshmi Puja actually represents that. That, oh, I will have the visitation of wealth. But then there is a precondition of Lakshmi. Because Lakshmi is in the other side of Durga. See, Sridhar doctrine said so. So that, rather, Kamadeva is a son of Vishnu and Lakshmi. Kamadeva is a son of Lakshmi and Vishnu. So that the great power of Lakshmi in the sense that prosperity comes only when that disharmony is removed. That's why that before preparation for Diwali, people do house cleansing and other things. This kind of ritual purity and other things are also performed. But these are ritual purities. Ritual purity is not enough. There is a purification has to go on within us, and then only there is the possibility of overcoming evil. So the will. Now the will to overcome evil. What is that will? Will is a spiritual force. It's a spiritual energy. It's an engine. But that engine is being directed by our desire. So that we usurp that energy of will for personal purposes. Most of the time will energy is utilized fully from morning till night. We are willing it. I want to do this, I want to do that, I want to brush my teeth, I want to wake up early morning. Starting this, the whole day is caught up and involved into my personal nature, because now the will is continually being dragged to my personality. But it is when it is free, when momentarily if it is free, and if that is, if it is freed and then join hands with a nobler desire, with a creative activity, with satsang, with going to a proper place, then that desire. Now here we have liberated our free will. The freedom to will on the right side comes only when it is taken out of involvement with our personal nature. So that you see, sometimes we are drawn between the two things. There were two friends once upon a time. Evening they wanted to spend the Sunday. One said, I will go to some Swami has come and he is going to give discourse and there are lovely bhajans are also going on. I want to go there. The other friend said, no, but there is a mushaira, there is a good dance and other fine program. Come on, let's go there. They were both putting each other. And they said, yeah, you go your way, I go my way. The friend in that Garuda party and all those things, seeing there, said, oh, why am I here? I should have been there. How lovely my friend is enjoying that great discourse and he must be having a like Mushai, Kavali and other things. And the friend there was thinking, oh, I wish I was there. So that you see, our human mind is, this is the nature of human mind. The story shows that we are never satisfied at one place. When we are here, we want to be there. So that our mind has to be freed from these subtle hints that come to us from somewhere. And when it is released, one of the ways to do it is to sustain determination. We must have aspiration. That we must know the purpose of life. Why are we here? The very exercise, why is it that we must defeat evil in us? Why Why can't we entertain us? What's the matter if we are mixture of good and evil? But why be good? The question, why be good? That's a fundamental question. But because, but why evil? The question that, why evil? Because if you entertain evil, it is overcome your goodness. That's the answer. Why good? Because each time you contribute to goodness, the Spirit says, there is some kind of rejoicing in nature. In fact, he says that if you overcome that wrong even, one single witness of your nature, to that extent you have contributed to the collective goodness of humanity. And each time you fall, to that extent the whole of humanity has also fallen. So that each time you have overtaken your own lower nature, to that extent you have raised the whole collectivity of humanity, because we are so closely interlinked and interrelated. And the opposite also is that each time we have sinned, we have not only sinned against ourselves, sin against our higher nature. To that extent, we have contributed to greater darkness elsewhere. So the collectivity is our responsibility. So we must take it as a responsible individuals. So this is the motivation. Why should we overcome evil? If that is the motive, at the continual back of our mind, then we will have higher aspirations and repeatedly self-forgetful. We will try to forget ourselves, the little lower whispering self. The self-forgetfulness is the starting point. It's only then that we can ally ourselves to our duty, well performed, and we turn to our service. The service of humanity, the service of the divinity within us, the service of a guru that is there within us, and service to the higher purpose of life. So once the higher purposes of life are settled in our consciousness, in fact that is why we are here, that we would like to have a settled high purpose before our mind's eye. And if that is there, then we have higher aspirations. If that is there, then we have to see to it that the self is put behind, and the more and more self-forgetfulness will lead us to acts of charity, generosity. So that each time S.V.P. says that we have planted a rose in our neighbor's garden, a poisonous weed automatically gets out of our garden without making effort. Suppose I have got one weak point in my nature. If I have been really kind to somebody and have done some extraordinary goodness towards somebody, somehow or other that weak nature will go away. So it's no use confronting evil again and again directly, by rejecting it, because otherwise you may repress it. Repress it means putting it into the subconscious, behind, but not allowing it to come to consciousness. Rejecting it is one method. The other method is ignoring it. And don't let it become a part of, we must not identify ourselves with that evil, with that behavior. So it's not mine, it's not myself. If there is something in me that is wrong, it is not me that is wrong, because my me is the real me, which is constantly wants to strive towards life. It is a being of life, moving towards life, desires life, hungers for life. So they never identify ourselves with the lower nature, knowing that it is alien to us, opposite of identity. So lower manas wants to identify itself to lower things, the higher manas wants to identify itself to the Buddha. So it is the arousing of the higher nature. Is it true? My wish, we can overcome it. We have got time for just 2 minutes, but we can like to end it with a very beautiful invocation on Bhagavati Durga. It is in Sanskrit, but there is a translation. O Mother Bhagavati Durga, you are the container of all, and you again are the things contained. You are the supporter of all, and the bearer of the burden of all. You are the external being, you are the eternal being and the eternal abode of tranquility. Tranquility embodied. O protectress of the universe, salutations to thee. This is a time for questions.
There is a quotation of a Mahatma in the 10th column.
But that is exactly what we mentioned. The question is that Mahatma, the Krishna says that she has read somewhere, quoting from Mahatma, that he will exist only in human kingdom, which is not that in animal kingdom. Which is a fact, that is as I just mentioned. And we quoted from HPB. Let's go to this quotation. It says definitely and very clearly that the demon of light, lust, rebellion, hatred has never had any being on earth before the appearance of physical conscious man. So that before man comes, man means the thinking man comes on the scene, evil was not there. And evil still is not there in the lower kingdom. What is known as ferocity in animal is a natural functioning of taking place. As we said, the duality of good and evil takes place at a cosmic level. It is there in the manifested level. And this manifestation takes place in animal kingdom. So that there are animals who are very low, very kind, very, I wouldn't say kind, but totally harmless looking. But then there are very ferocious animals either side. But then we cannot blame them, though that is their nature. It is our nature, it is at human level that this difficulty takes place. So that this person is right when he says that, quoting from Atma, it's only when man is there and it is in man that this duality takes place, and it is therefore it is man's responsibility to overcome it. It not only is his responsibility not only to himself but to the totality of humanity. This is very important. The incentive which Theosophy gives as to why we should improve ourselves is not that I can look upon myself as something great, something perfect, something grand. Not that I adore myself, because that will be another form of black magic. Because black magicians adore themselves. They worship themselves and they want others to worship them. It is because I want to contribute to the general well-being of humanity. The general well-being of humanity will grow only when I remove weakness from my nature and increase the sum total of goodness by my little contribution, however little it may be, drop by drop. That is necessary. So that, of course, let us never, sometimes we say it's an animal nature and all those things, we say, we are trying to compare metaphorically the animal wickedness and animal lust and all those things. But actually animal is a poor innocent animal, we say poor innocent animal. It is innocent because it cannot help it, it has its own instinct. It is obedient to its own instinct. Another part is this, we are not obedient to our own higher nature, are we? Our higher instinct, as we said. In fact, we are not obedient to our higher instinct, where animal spontaneously is obedient to his higher instinct. In fact, we pervert it. That is why at one page HPB says that we must not tame animals too often. We must not, make the animal live among us. Because by we are making them pervert, they lose their natural instincts. If animals stay too often, too close to human beings, they lose their natural instincts of self-defense and other things. So animal must be left to itself and respected for his own natural inclinations. So we can end here with this quotation. Continually grow the glory of that man. How he grows. Who is wakeful, mindful, whose deeds are pure, whose acts are deliberate, who is self-controlled, and who lives according to love.
Then we will be all...